Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We are back for the fourth edition of the Heat Check here on the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. I'm your host, Smith Brickner, and joining me to do this episode once again is my co-host, Nathan Graham. Nathan, we had very different scouting experiences this weekend. You went to a legitimate minor league baseball game, and I went to an independent baseball league game.
We did. A lot of similarities, though, I think.
I think so. I mean, I think if you put the best independent league teams up against AAA teams, I think it'd at least be a good game, right? I think, right? Because the Atlantic League, which I went to the Long Island Ducks game. Uh-huh. I think the Ducks could absolutely play in AAA. It may not be the best team, but I think they could have a chance, right?
I think they could hang on. And AAA is kind of a weird mix. You get some prospects, but you get a lot of guys hanging on, a lot of 4A guys. And so I don't think it's that dissimilar to some independent leagues.
Oh, no. No, I mean, it's funny because there's some guys in the Ducks, and I might write about what I saw, and I primarily went to go see Daniel Murphy and see if there's anything there, and hint, hint, there's not. There are a couple of guys that get signed out of the Atlantic League each year, and Rich Hill is the best example of this. He's also like the anomaly there, where he becomes a very good major leaguer after going to the Atlantic League. That does not happen all that often. I think David Peralta might be the hitter example of a guy that was an independent ball for a little bit, but beyond that, it is interesting to see like the guys that have been the have-beens and the guys that are actually never got a chance in an affiliated ball that try to make into the Atlantic League. And there are some guys like that. And they do.
I think we're seeing more and more of teams willing to take a look at independent league guys, and especially pitchers that maybe late bloomers or somebody that got something figured out. Take a chance on those guys.
Oh yeah. I mean, the fact that there's now a partnership between the Atlantic League and Major League Baseball. I don't know about the Frontier League. They might, but I know the Atlantic League is basically the guinea pig for Major League Baseball.
And right.
It's actually worked in their favor because now they have TrackMan that all the major league teams have access to. And so teams will send a scout if there is enough loud data in the TrackMan system. So it's worked out, but we're not here to talk about the Atlantic League. I might write a piece on what I saw, but that's not for this podcast.
No.
We're going to go through what we normally do. We'll start with AAA and build our way down to the lower minors, and we'll tell you guys who's hot, who's worthy of recognition, who's not. And believe me, there is someone that we want to talk about in that category. We've got a couple of listener questions, and then we've also got a small piece from Ben Spinier, one of my favorite guys on the BP prospect team, who's got a take on a surging consensus top prospect in baseball. But all that to come later on in the episode. Nathan, we'll start where we usually start in AAA. We'll talk about the guys that are hot. And there's a couple of names on here that if you told me that they were hot in AAA, it wouldn't really surprise me, either because they're a top echelon prospect or because they've already been in AAA for a little bit, or they're just a pitchability guy. But we'll start with the hitter.
Yep.
That being Ailey De La Cruz, consensus top prospect in baseball. Some people on this website argued for him to be the number one prospect in baseball. And I understood.
I don't know if they'd be wrong.
Right. I understand the theory, because the chase is really the only thing keeping him from being that number one prospect. Right. But over the course of the season, last 10 days specifically, you've really started to see him not chase, right? Like, that's been the most impressive part about this.
Yeah, he's really starting to walk more. And, you know, I wonder if it's a function of pitchers know that he'll expand the zone, and when he does damage. And maybe they're just, you know, smart pitchers are deciding to stay away from him and let him take his walks rather than hit 150 miles an hour off the bat.
Over the last 10 days, he's 10 for 30 with 13 walks mixed in. He has 43 plate appearances over the last 10 days, and almost a third of them have resulted in walks. And he matches it up with only 9 strikeouts. And oh, by the way, also 3 doubles, 3 home runs, 12 RBIs, and 5 stolen bases. Nathan, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be in the major leagues in a month or 2 months? Or I'm going to call it worst case, 3 months from now.
I don't know. I put him on the dock for us to talk about just because, just in case. I wanted to talk about him because he's such an exciting prospect. I don't know. I don't really know what the Reds are going to do with him. Do they keep him down and try to, you know, maybe manipulate that time a little bit? Or do they bring him up like they should?
I think the fact they brought up Matt McClain when they did,
yeah,
was the best news possible for Ellie De La Cruz. Because to me, that tells me, and I think Matt McClain is a good enough prospect that the Reds would consider manipulating his service time.
I agree.
I don't see how they bring up McClain, but then not bring up De La Cruz. And De La Cruz having a better campaign, frankly, in AAA than McClain did. And that's after going 1-for-21 with no walks and 11 strikeouts the first, I want to call it, 3 weeks of the season after he returned from injury.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and he's one of the youngest guys in AAA. You kind of forget that.
Is he the youngest? Is he the youngest?
I'd have to look. But he's up there. He's one of the youngest.
He might be. If you guys know and you're listening to the podcast and you know that, you can comment on Twitter saying, I knew before you guys did that Ellie De La Cruz was the youngest player in AAA, and you'll get a gold star. Congratulations.
There you go.
Quinn Priester is the pitcher that we've marked as the hot pitcher here in AAA. And Nathan, you really know how to get me going, because I've had provocative thoughts on Quinn Priester dating back to last year when I saw him on a rehab assignment in Bradenton. Uh-huh. I didn't get it. I didn't see it. And I still don't really get it, and I still don't really see it. But I do see at least a back-end starter, which, man, that feels like a letdown from when he first was drafted. But yeah, it is still an accomplishment that we're pretty certain that he's going to be a major league starter. Like, that is a win in the grand scheme of things. Uh-huh. It's just interesting how that evolved.
Yeah, it is. He feels like one that we've always kind of been waiting for him to take the next step. And, you know, he drafted like 19th overall. And, you know, he's never been bad, but it's just every year he kind of takes the next step in the organization, and it's never exciting. But I saw him the other day, and at the start of the year, he was your standard, you know, fastball heavy. But lately, and, you know, it's kind of shown some success, but he's been just kind of spamming the change in the curve, or the curve in the slider. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe some of his recent successes, he just sticking with what works for him.
I mean, that's what I saw last year. Was it was an aesthetically pleasing curveball that I didn't think got a ton of swings and misses. But, I mean, to his credit, I think the curveball is a little bit more positive in that it is creating more vertical action than it has in the past. It was a little bit more slurvy than what it was, but he's now differentiated the curveball and slider enough to where,
right,
that is a viable pitch for him. That's not only aesthetically pleasing, but also gets whiffs. So you're right. Here's the problem, though. It's like, what is the ultimate ceiling for this guy? Because I think you have a lot of people on Twitter clamoring that he should be one of the upper echelon prospects in baseball. And I'm sitting here and thinking, what is his ceiling? Like, is it a good Aaron Sanchez season back in 2017, 2018? Is that his ceiling at this point?
Yeah, I think you're kind of right. I think he's going to be a mid to back end of the rotation type guy that eats innings in Pittsburgh. But you know what? I mean, that's still pretty good. You know, that's still value.
Oh, yeah. There, yeah. You know? I mean, they got, think about that. They hit on a prep arm.
Yeah.
A cold weather prep arm and with a top 20 pick.
Yeah. That does happen.
That is a success.
It is. It is.
Even though it's not like the upside that we thought, it is a developmental success.
Yeah. And I think people just kind of, you know, saw the pedigree and, you know, he's drafted so high and they wanted him to be a star, but he's just a good pitcher.
I would be really curious to see what his four seam looks like because he really has used the sinker extensively.
Yeah.
Like the fastball to me isn't sensational by any stretch of the imagination, but I have to imagine that with the curveball having the downward action that it now previously did not have, I wonder if just having a fastball that he could use that isn't amazing up in the zone, but is good enough.
Right.
I wonder if that's the next step for him. And I think if there's any reason why he's not in triple, not in the majors, excuse me, it might be that reason.
Yeah. But that might be the next step for him.
I think so. Moving on to double A, we'll start with Cesar Prieto, the shortstop for the Baltimore Orioles, former Cuban National Series batting champion. Struggled in double A last year. He's repeating the level, and he's already 24. So those are a couple of caveats here. But the plate discipline and the bat-to-ball skills are really impressive. And Nathan, he's had a red-hot 10 days. And I guess that is the point of this podcast, is to be a heat check. And he's one of the hottest hitters in minor league baseball right now.
He is. And I think there's not going to be a ton of pop there. But I think the bat-to-ball skills are elite. And, you know, from the left side, I think that's always going to have value.
I think so. I mean, he hasn't lifted the ball as much as I would like him to.
No.
Right? Like, I think he's got the bat speed to pull it for home runs. I don't know about pushing it, but I at least want to see it, right? Like, this is the time that guys should be trying to lift the ball. When they're in double A, when they're in high A, that's really where you want to see it. And, you know, we've talked about how the jump from high A to double A is the second biggest jump in talent compared to AAA to the majors. But, you know, he's now figured out how to limit the strikeouts, how to not chase, right? And now that next step for him is, can he lift the ball more consistently? Because the bat to ball is there.
Yeah.
Let's just see if he can actually lift the ball with impact. I mean, he's got 4 home runs on the season. I think there's a little bit more there, but
yeah, there might be a little bit more, but I think it's more doubles type power. And I don't think he ever hits for a ton of over the fence power, but he's going to make contact. He's going to hit a ton of doubles, I believe.
Cesar Prieto will have a 20 home run campaign in the major leagues at some point in his career. Right. I'm calling it.
Okay.
I'm calling it. If the launch angle goes up over the next half a year, right, until the end of the season, I am predicting that he will have a 20 home run season, and it'll be the max for him. But I think it's in his range of outcomes.
I think he's also in the right organization for that too.
Bingo, ding, 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 ding. Exactly. So
now, do you get a gold star if that comes true?
Would I get a gold star?
Yeah, promised it.
Absolutely. There I am taking a victory. Please, I'm the king of victory laps. Now, I don't get to take many victory laps, Nathan.
Right.
But if I'm right, I will take a victory lap.
Okay. So,
but anyway, so moving on to MSG and the right-hand pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's funny to me, Nathan, because we know who the top guys are in the Dodgers farm system from an arms perspective, right? The Bobby Millers, the Gavin Stones, both who will be up in the major leagues by the time you've already heard this, but Emma Sheehan and Landon Knack and a couple of other guys in Double A Tulsa just continue to shred these offenses in these lineups that are actually not terrible in the Texas League this year. And it's like, nobody gives a damn.
Right. They're the next wave of Dodger arms.
It's amazing to me.
Yeah. And you know, I think Sheehan's going to be the best of them.
I think so, too. I mean, I really like Landon Knack. I really like Emmett Sheehan, right?
Yeah.
The fastball, slider change are all projected as plus. Striking out 15 per 9 in the Texas League. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, he should be up with the major league team. If the Dodgers are going to do the right thing, he needs to be up in their bullpen immediately and would be the next guy after Miller and after Stone to make a major league start if necessitated.
Yeah. Now, I was kind of thinking about that too. You know, he could probably be plugged into the bullpen right now, but the Dodgers really don't do that, do they? I mean, they did it with Walker Buehler.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know.
I think Walker Buehler was just too good for AAA, too good for the minor leagues at the time. And they had so many starters. Like, Sheehan to me, like, I would give Miller and I would give Stone the opportunities to start, right? Sure. Maybe Sheehan would come in as a spot starter, but look, I think he's proving at this point. Like, send him to AAA, sure, see what happens. But I think even there, he'd be too good for the level. And, you know, when you've got that fastball, slider, changeup, that multi-inning relief role, which they've been using Andre Jackson for, no disrespect to him whatsoever, but like Emmett Sheehan would be a pretty significant upgrade over there. And yeah, that would keep him stretched out. That would allow them to use him as a starter to some capacity. But I mean, there's really no, I think we're both in agreement. There's no reason he should still be in Double-A at the very least.
No.
So.
Yeah. He's, you know, you got to make a prediction last. I'm going to make one for Sheehan. I think he could be the ace of the Dodgers here in about 3 or 4 years.
Oh my God.
I think he could be.
Drop the mic. Drop the mic. Jeffrey, put in some sound bite. Put in a sound effect.
Yeah. We need an
dramatic,
air horn.
Something dramatic. Yeah. Yeah. We got to come up with a sound effect. Let us know in the comments of this show and let us know on Twitter what should be the sound effects we use on this podcast. But that's a biggie. The ace of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Okay. You are going out way more out on a limb than I was. So I give you credit for that.
All right.
I give you credit. We're going to go to High A. And for some reason, we're going to go to a Rockies prospect because that's something that we have to do. We have to talk about all the teams, even the ones that we don't think are very good at this player development thing.
Yeah.
Rockies is certainly one of them. But Yankeel Fernandez, we have to talk about him. Because over the last 10 days, you can make a case that the hottest hitter in baseball, at least in the minor leagues, over those 10 days is one of Cesar Prieto in Double A or Yankeel Fernandez in High A.
Yeah, he's, he's your classic power hitter, corner outfielder. I mean, he's got a rocket arm, he hits for power to all fields, but it's kind of, you know, your same story for a 20-year-old in High A. He's got to clean the approach up. He chases a little bit too much. And, you know, like with every Rockies prospect we talk about, you know, A and High A are kind of launching pads. We'll kind of see the real Yankeel Fernandez when he gets to Double-A Hartford, I think.
I think so, too. I mean, the WRC Plus is good. It's 127. It's not great. And he doesn't strike out a ton for a power hitter either, which is interesting.
He doesn't.
He's averaged, I think, a little more than 20% of the strikeout rate over the season, if I'm not mistaken. He makes enough contact in the zone. But, yeah, I mean, he chases way too much.
Yeah, the plate discipline needs to be improved.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And that does not get easier as you go up the ladder. You know, this is kind of the fallacy where a lot of guys that – chase in lower minors, people think, oh, they can get better over time.
Right.
It probably gets harder than it gets easier, right?
Yeah.
So I'd like guys that have better plate discipline going up the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but again, we're also talking about an organization that isn't exactly a model for how to enhance plate discipline amongst your hitters as they climb up the ladder.
Right,
so,
right. And like we said, that next step, that's a big one, up to Double-A.
It is. And especially more so in the past year or so since they got rid of the short season level.
Right.
And even, you know, the Appalachian League is no more, right? Those two levels would really weed out some of the guys that shouldn't be climbing the minor league ladder to low A.
Sure.
But now those guys are in low A and high A that probably wouldn't be there in previous years. So that jump is even bigger than it has been in years past. So
exactly.
You know, there's not much left for Yankeel Fernandez to show us in High A, but, you know, he probably will be there because the Rockies like a guy to own the level for whatever that's worth.
Right.
So
Andy is only 20 years old. So
he's only 20, but honestly, age is just a number to me. Yeah. I really care about the skill set, and I think I don't know if he's going to be tested in high A with some of the pitching quality that doesn't allow for a real eye test on the chase because of good stuff, right? Like they don't have the pitchers in high A don't really have the secondaries that elicit chases out of the zone as you would in double A.
Right.
And, you know, if his one thing that he has to work on is not chasing out of the zone, I just think he has to show that in double A, frankly, and he's not doing in high A so far. So if there's one reason he's still in high A, that's the reason. But, you know, the power is legitimate. The strikeout ability is surprising. And I think that alone would be the reason to stay on Yankiel Fernandez. But moving on to our pitcher, left-handed pitcher, Carson Wisenhunt of the San Francisco Giants. I remember last year when he got suspended from collegiate baseball for performance-enhancing drugs. And there were a lot of people that were down on him. A lot of people said that there was some average stuff. And to be clear, that was the case. That was true. It was a lot of average stuff, average command projection. But he has a velocity jump on the fastball, right? It's now mid-90s stuff. Still has a very good changeup that was his best pitch coming out of the draft. So he's got this fastball change combination. And he's carving up these high A lineups.
Yeah, he is. I think there's still some reliever risk there, but you know, I like seeing that velocity jump, and you can see it jump even a little bit more if he does move to the pen.
What is your main concern with Wisenhunt? Is it just that the command? Is it just that the mechanics are not amazing? Like, what is the biggest reason that you would think Carson Wisenhunt would be a major league reliever?
Well, I think it's just a fastball change. He relies on that so much. You know, I know you can get by with just a two-pitch mix, but for me, I think it's kind of stuff that will play up just the short burst in relief.
That's a fair point. Now, I will say he's mastered the two most difficult pitches. And when I say mastered, I mean those are his two primary pitches, his fastball and changeup. I'm not saying they're double plus or anything like that. Although his changeup might be double plus.
Might be close.
It's borderline, right? He's got the two most difficult pitches down, right? Like, he's shown an ability to locate the fastball early in the count. He's even willing to throw the changeup early in the count. Mm-hmm. And he's got a really good feel for locating the changeup low and away to righties, and he's able to jam them with lefties. So he's got that, right? The question is, can he develop the third pitch and the slider or curveball or cutter, whatever you want that third pitch to be? That is typically an easier pitch to learn than a fastball grip or a changeup. So if we're projecting what a guy – go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think he's in a pretty good organization to maybe help him take that step. The Giants are pretty good at pitching.
Oh, yeah. I would say probably a top six or seven.
I would agree.
Front office, which is good these days. I mean, if you're in the top 12 or 13, I'd even go 13, you know, with pitching development, I think it's a generally good farm system. So when we say top 13, that may not sound great, but it's the gap in player development between 1 and 13 is much smaller than it would be 14 to 30, right?
Sure, of course.
But yeah, we're definitely in on Carson Wisenhunt. We want to see that third pitch come about, but We are intrigued at the very least. But we've got to low A. We've got a couple of guys we've talked about in the past. Tamar Johnson is having I don't want to call it underwhelming because the Florida State League is a pitcher-friendly haven.
Yeah.
But he had a slow start to his year. He had a hamstring injury, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And he really didn't get off to the right start after he came off the IL. But over the last 10 days, you're starting to see it come around for Tamar, and you're starting to see him make better contact.
Right. Yeah. You know, we talked about before kind of some, you know, sell high prospects. I think Tamar Johnson's a buy low prospect. You know, his.
I didn't know where you were going with that for a minute. I was like, oh boy, where's he going with this?
No. I think we're getting ready to see maybe a breakout from Tamar Johnson. you know, he's still getting settled in, but I think the bat to ball skills are elite. And you know, he's not the biggest guy, but we're seeing some pretty good exit velocities. I think he had 111 maximum exit velocities. So I think there's power there, even though he's not that big guy. And I think we're getting ready to see a breakout from Tamara.
He's got a double plus average exit velocity. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to leave that out there and let you guys simmer on that. He's not swinging and missing a ton, and he's making a ton of hard contact.
Yeah. And I know he was a high draft pick, but it feels like he's kind of been forgotten, you know, because he hasn't played a whole lot. The numbers aren't eye-popping or anything, but the talent's still there. He's a good player.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is so another guy that we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes after Ben Spanier gives his spiel on a particular player is that a lot of those players, except for Johnson and Drew Jones, who has not been good and I think might be hurt now, a lot of the guys drafted around them early last year, even Rocker before he went down, was getting some buzz. A lot of guys that were drafted early last year that aren't hurt right now are doing quite well.
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, Johnson, being that he was hurt to begin the year, didn't really get the hype.
Yeah.
You know, that a lot of prospects get when they have a good start to the year.
Right. Yeah. I think he kind of got overlooked a little bit.
He did. He absolutely did. I think he was a top five prospect in the draft last year. I stand by that. And I think he's starting to really come into form. But when you don't chase, when you make contact in the zone, you hit the ball really hard and you play, I'm not going to call it premier position, but second base, a middle infield spot, I think he's comfortably in the future. That's a really good prospect. So
yeah.
Very much in on him. And we're also very much in on my paisano, Frank Mazzucato, right? I think this is the second time we're talking about Mazzucato, right?
It is. He continues to play well.
He continues to play well, and he continues to pitch at a level that I do not understand why he's still there. Like, no, why is Frank Mazzucato still in low A?
I'm not really sure. I mean, the Royals are pretty conservative when about promoting, but it still feels like he should be challenged a little bit.
He's been there for a year now. Like, what is he gaining from being in low A?
I don't know.
So what, he's walking 5 per 9. Does that really matter in high A? No, it doesn't matter.
No. And I wonder how much of that is a function of, you know, maybe the umpires aren't as good seeing those breaking balls that he's throwing.
That's an excellent point. See, this is why you're on the show. I didn't even think about that.
I need a reason.
This is you are the king of reason, of rationale, where I am irrational, where I am reactionary. You're the guy that brings me in.
I keep you grounded.
You're the guy who keeps me grounded.
That's right.
But I think we're both in agreement here that we don't understand this. Like, we said on the last show where we talked about Frank Mazzucato that he should have been up at high A before that episode, and he's still in low A Columbia. I don't get it. Royals, do the right thing. Promote this man and just see what you got in high A. Like, he's not going to prove anything more in low A.
No.
All right, Nathan, we're going to talk about a guy who's cold.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, we are going with 2 Tampa Bay Rays in a row, 2 episodes in a row. You might be creating some enemies here, Nathan, but Mason Auer is having a rough go at it in double A, and it sucks because I am a Mason Auer fan.
Well, I think it was in March. There was some dummy on the prospect team who picked him to be their breakout player of the year, and that was me.
Hey, you know, we had Daniel Palencia and Mason Auer. We're all aboard, baby.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that one up, too. But I mean, he performed well in high A as I think a 20-year-old. He looked good in the AFL, and I just thought, you know, he might be the next in line, the next good bat for the Rays. And it's just kind of falling apart. And he's not injured. It's I don't know if it's mechanical or mental, but he's really struggling in Double A.
It doesn't make sense to me because last year was highly impressive. Right. Like, really good exit velocities, does impact the ball, lifts the ball, speed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes enough contact. Like, I would say probably an average hit tool in OFP, so 75th percentile outcome is an average hit tool.
Yeah.
It does chase a little bit, but yeah, I mean, the chase is just out of control right now. Right. I think over his last 10 days, you marked in the notes here, 12 strikeouts in his last 21 plate appearances. That's
that's rough. No.
Yeah, that's rough.
But I was talking.
Is this a buy low opportunity though?
Maybe. You know, I think you know the Rays are pretty good. If you had to pick a team of maybe getting them fixed, they might be the team to pick. I did kind of look. I talked to a scout about them, and we talked about JUCO hitters and how they tend to struggle once they get in. And like in the last decade, the only JUCO hitter with a positive WAR is Tim Anderson.
So, wow. Are you serious?
So maybe ours just, yeah. So maybe ours just falling into that.
Wow. That's an interesting tidbit right there.
Yeah.
That's a cause for the research. Wow.
Yeah.
So we got two research pieces that I want to do here now. I think I talked about this on the last podcast, but the jump from double A to the majors, is there a discernible difference between those who are promoted from triple A, right?
Right.
And now we have the next one on JUCO players, specifically hitters, because I know there's quite a few JUCO pitchers that are in the majors, but that's interesting.
Why do they struggle? I don't know.
Why do they struggle? Yeah, that's interesting. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to listen to Ben Spanier. He's got a tidbit, about 2 minutes or so, on Jackson Holliday. I've been teasing it for a bit, but everyone's...
Go ahead. I think he is Ben's subject of his 10-pack tomorrow, so hopefully people read that.
Yeah, do yourself a favor and read the Monday morning 10-pack, okay? Subscribe to Baseball Perspectives if you haven't. You're going to get tons of really valuable reports from the likes of Ben, Grant Schiller, myself, John Troopin, Brandon Williams, Nathan, Jarrett, Jeff. I mean, the whole team, right, is going out there and grinding and doing all the reports. So we really appreciate your support. If you're already a subscriber, and if you're not, be sure to hit that subscribe button and support us, and you will get tons of great content, including Ben's report on Jackson Holliday. But we'll take the next couple of minutes or so, and we'll listen to what Ben has to say about one of the top prospects in minor league baseball, that is Jackson Holliday.
So what makes Jackson Holliday different, what's allowed him to dominate both low A and high A so far this year? We can begin with the swing. He's got good bat speed. He's got the correct bat path to hit homers. He takes these huge explosive cuts. Reminds me a bit of picture Anthony Volpe a bit. Maybe not that extreme. And of course, Holliday is left-handed as well. But he does not get cheated, and he gets everything out of his frame, which again is a bit Volpe-ish. He's a shorter, smaller frame, but he's strong, stout, and athletic. And he produces a lot of impact when he hits the ball. But what really makes him special to me is the swing decisions. We're talking elite swing decisions. He takes pitches millimeters off the plate in all counts. And if you're trying to get him to swing at something a little bit further out, forget about it. He's not even, you know, at this level, at high A, the stuff is not good enough to get him to go outside the zone. And he's also extremely good at recognizing breaking pitches and hitting mistake breaking pitches in any count, but especially late in the count. So especially if you go to the well a couple times, he's gonna get you on the third try, which might be with two strikes, second or third try, whatever. The only player, teenager, in high A ball that's comparable, in my view, is Evan Carter, when I saw him last year. Now, at the time I saw him, Evan Carter wasn't impacting the ball nearly as much as Jackson Holliday is right now. So that's one difference between them. But the swing decisions really make Holliday stand out as well. As far as the rest of the game, it's all good, too. He's a plus runner for me. And he's an opportunistic base runner, very aware, all that stuff. And he's a good shortstop. I'm not going to say I saw enough of him in my look at short to, tell you he's a plus shortstop or he's great or his range is incredible. I don't know all of that for sure, but he's got plenty of arm. The actions are good. He knows what he's doing. So just the overall package, but especially the combination of explosiveness, game power potential, along with the elite swing decisions are what makes him the number one prospect in baseball right now.
We are back, and Nathan, Jackson Holliday, man. Mm-mm. That's it. Jackson Holliday, man.
Yeah. He's a dude. I think he's kind of turning into the consensus top prospect in baseball.
The Orioles, you know, we talked 2 years in a row, man. 2 years in a row they're doing this.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can make a case for Ellie De La Cruz still. He's kind of the wild card, but I think Holliday is the safe pick. I think he's just the skill set's so well-rounded. Even though he's young, I mean, he has that look of an all-star shortstop down the road.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard some people say, oh, Junior Caminero can be the top. Get out of here. Nah. Okay. Junior
he's a good player, but...
is a good player. He's a mm-hmm. good prospect. He might even belong in the top 10.
Sure.
But is he a better prospect than Jackson Holliday? No, he's not. Get out of here.
I would say, ask yourself, who would you rather have?
Oh, it's Jackson Holliday. It's not even a question.
Of course.
Would you personally prefer, Nathan, would you prefer Ellie De La Cruz or Jackson Holliday? That's the question.
Yeah. You know what? I think I would pay money to see Ellie De La Cruz, but if I had to start a team, it'd be with Jackson Holliday.
Ooh.
You know?
Okay. See, I think I might go Ellie De La Cruz there.
Yeah.
Because if it hits, and Jared has said this in so many words.
Yeah.
He's the best player in baseball.
Right. Multiple MVPs.
Like a better version of O'Neal Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Like if O'Neal Cruz was just 5% better in every single way.
Yeah.
He'd be Ellie De La Cruz.
Sure.
So that's like, that's what you can expect. And a 5% better O'Neal Cruz is the best player in baseball. Yeah. Maybe Ohtani at that point, but there. So, but Holliday, listen, I mean, what we thought were sixes might just be a bunch of sevens.
And
like the hit tool is up there. The power's up. I mean, he's got everything.
Yeah.
So I think there's a chance.
There is.
Some listener questions, and we thank you guys once again for all your questions. It's really cool to see so many people engaging with the podcast and listening and giving us feedback. Please continue to do so. It's really encouraging for Nathan and I to see that. But the first question comes from John Schmucks the Third. There's just no way that's a real name, and if it is, I'm sorry, but that's got to be a fake name. Not a fake name. AJ Smith Shaver, is he for real? What about his stuff has made him so dominant to begin the year? Any chance he's up by the end of the year? I'll answer the last part of that question. The answer is yes. There is absolutely a chance that AJ Smith-Shawver is up at the major leagues by the end of the season. He is already in AAA.
Which
he's 20 years old.
Yeah. You know, we talked about the Royals kind of holding back Mazzucato. I mean, the Braves are pushing Smith-Shawver.
This is what they do.
They
are top, I think, collectively amongst the hitters and pitchers. They are the top five player development organization. I'm not just saying that because I worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, that helps because I saw like the process.
Right.
But this is a top five player development organization, and they are declaring that he is good enough to be in AAA. Like, it's absolutely incredible that he goes from, you know, the low minors to begin the year to AAA this quickly. Like, it reminds me of how they worked Spencer Strider up the minor league ladder.
Right, right.
Now, I'm not saying I'm not saying that he is Spencer Strider, no, right? Like, no one is. But there's no denying that the fastball that he's got going is one of the best in baseball, and I think he's very comfortably a top 60 prospect in baseball at this point. Like, is that even a question?
I think he's probably the fastest riser we've seen this year.
Well, you say that, but what about our friend Mr. Abbott in the Red system, huh?
Yeah.
Would you go him or would you go that's a good question.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah.
Would you go Abbott or would you go Smith-Shawver?
Yeah, you had to put me on the spot. I think I'd go Smith-Shawver.
Ooh.
Because the age, and you know, Abbott's a little bit older, I believe. But I think as far as ceiling, I think Smith-Shawver has him on ceiling.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, the fastball is really impressive, right? His slider, which I think Stack has actually marks as a cutter, is more of like a gyro-y slider. It doesn't have like a ton of sweeping movement. And you know what? Like, that's okay because he locates it extremely well. He's got good velocity separation from the fastball. But he's averaging 97 in his starts. He's maintaining it. He's got very good spin rates. He's got a good spin profile on it. It's very obvious why he is succeeding. He's doing everything that we could have possibly hoped for in terms of the command, because that was always the question, is like, how will the command develop? And
And he's throwing strikes this year. Yeah.
He's throwing a ton of strikes.
Yeah.
A ton of strikes. So, I mean, it's very obvious why he's succeeding. And, I mean, listen, it's the Braves. They will call him up if they think he's ready.
Right.
At @Phils_fan, PHAN on Twitter asks, Orion concurring, right? Concurring. It sounds like concurring, but without the N. Kerkering. I don't know. Kerkering. We're going to go with Kerkering.
Okay.
Orion Kerkering, where does his recent level of performance place him in the Phillies organization? What is his ceiling, and what are the chances that he reaches the majors later this year? Well, I believe Jarrett had him on the Phillies list. I should probably have looked this up beforehand. Yes, he did. Number 20 on the offseason list as a reliever-only prospect. Mm-hmm. But he's had a 3-5 mile an hour velo spike. He's reaching triple digit with the fastball. The slider is now double plus per Jarrett. Mm-hmm. And he's looking a hell of a lot like Jose Alvarado. And obviously the style is not this very, very different. But in terms of like this overwhelming fastball, this overwhelming slider with like 3-grade command, that's Orion Kerkering from the right side.
Right. Yeah, I saw Jarrett put on Twitter the other night, fastball at 102 from Kerkering, and I've never heard of him. I had to look him up and see, and then we get the question. He also asked, you know, could he be called up this year? And I think if Philadelphia is desperate and they're close, maybe. But I think he still gets a little more time. What's he in, high A right now? I believe so.
He's in high A.
So I think he still gets a little more time. Maybe next year, but if things break right, that we could see him in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, it is a reliever, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, the reliever could climb up the minor league ladder pretty quickly.
Yeah.
The Phillies are somehow still – they had an awful, awful start to the year. They bounced back a little bit. They're only 2 games under 500 at this point.
Yeah.
You know how the Philly season's going to go, right? Like, they're going to have, like, a ridiculous July where they'll go, like, I don't know, 20-8. They'll buy a couple relievers, and they'll still probably need another reliever. And then who do we have in the minor leagues?
This guy's 102. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just call him up, right, and see what happens, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's how it's going to go. I'm calling it now. Like, so to answer the question, I think he will be a major leaguer. Mm-hmm. And I understand that's also a bit of a hot take at this point.
Yeah.
So
there we go. We're full of hot takes this episode.
We are. I mean, the heat check, right? Like hot takes on the heat check. It's only fitting. It's only fitting. But Nathan, we did in 40 plus minutes a day, right? Like, I think we're reaching our sweet spot because we had one episode that was like 30 minutes, probably too short.
Yeah.
One that was an hour plus, probably too long. 50 minutes last time. Yep. It's a smidge too long. I think 41, 42 is just in the right spot for us.
Yeah, we're finding our groove.
We are. And it's all thanks to you guys for all your feedback and your support. We once again thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Heat Check. We encourage you to ask questions whenever we bring them up a couple of days before we record the podcast about any prospects you might be curious about. So continue to do that. Continue to subscribe to Baseball Prospectus. And continue to listen to the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. But that will do it for this episode of the Heat Check on the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. We'll see you guys next time.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.